Hello and welcome to episode 218 of Turkey Book Talk. I'm William Armstrong here in Istanbul. In this episode, we speak to Emre Toros, Professor of Political Science at Ankara's Hacettepe University and the author of Electoral Integrity in Turkey, published by Edinburgh University Press. The book takes on the knotty question of whether Turkey is still a democracy, weighing up various aspects of the country's democratic credentials, from the media to the judiciary, and whether President Erdogan's still iron grip over pretty much all state institutions means that we can still describe nationwide elections in the country as free, let alone fair. We, of course, had this conversation after the recent local elections delivered surprising defeats to Erdogan's ruling party across Turkey, prompting some observers to declare the resurrection of democratic competition in the country. But it's not a plot spoiler to say that Emre Toros's book paints a more ambiguous picture, portraying Turkey as being in a kind of grey area, neither robustly democratic nor conventionally authoritarian. In the conversation, we dig into the details behind why that's the case. But before we get started, let me appeal for your support. It takes a lot of time and effort to read all these books, prepare the podcast, edit it, and put it out there into the world. And I do need listeners' support, your support, to be able to keep going. Since 2015, we've given a platform to researchers, academics, and authors working on Turkish history, politics, society, literature, and the arts. Turkey Book Talk is completely independent with no sponsorships. It depends 100% on the goodwill of listeners like you. So if you are able to support, please consider becoming a Turkey Book Talk member on Patreon. Supporting on Patreon is a nice thing to do, and it also gets you some pretty good extras. Those extras include a 35% discount on all books published in IB Taurus and Bloomsbury's Great Turkey and Ottoman History series. As a member, you get a special code to use at the online checkout, which you can use to purchase hundreds of titles in that IB Taurus, Bloomsbury, Turkey and Ottoman History series. Members also receive a PDF transcript of every interview when the episode is published, and you get transcripts of the whole archive of interviews, including some previously unpublished extras. And finally, to members, I also send links to a couple of articles related to the subject of the episode upon publication, which is ideal if you want to delve a bit deeper. To become a member, just go to Turkey Book Talk's Patreon page and pledge $3, €3, or £2.50 per episode. You can pledge more if you want, but whatever you pledge, membership is entirely at your own discretion. There are no strings attached. You'll be free to sign off whenever you want. But now on to our conversation with Emre Toros. Of course, as we mentioned, the opposition put in an unexpectedly strong showing in that vote, prompting many observers to herald the resurrection, almost from the dead, of Turkey's democracy. I asked Emre Toros whether he shared that assessment and how he viewed the campaign, the fairness of it, and the voting process on the day.
Well, with the lenses of electoral integrity, the last local elections in Turkey were not very problematic. Of course, there was some issues. A couple of them were kind of quite important, and they were on the media and they were serious problems. One is the situation in Van about the removal of the elected mayor. And the other thing is that's still ongoing. I don't know how that will end, but an appeal by CHP to the results in Hatay, which the allegations of voters who voted but already dead. So unregistered voters voting. So that's the kind of two big headings about the local elections, if we consider the electoral integrity. But on the other hand, evaluating Turkey as a competitive authoritarianism, the elections are quite important. They mean a lot for Turkish people. Basically, in every competitive authoritarian system, elections are the only tools that the citizens can raise up their voices, or the most important one, if not the only one. So in that sense, it was quite important. We all see that in Turkey, we still can have elections. And how democratic are those elections is another question. Yes, there were lots of problems with this particular one as well, especially when we consider the transformation of the Turkish political system to the presidential system. Now, the incumbent party and the head of state can use the state resources for their campaigns, which makes the playing field quite tilted. So the incumbent AKP basically enjoyed, and also its allies also enjoyed this a lot, which makes a not a fair election. But at the end of the day, the results showed that in Turkey, the governments, even in local sense, can change by elections. So there is a peaceful transition of power by elections in Turkey, which is a very good sign. That's a plus for Turkish democracy.
Yeah, and obviously before the vote, there was a bit of speculation about this being almost the last stand, really, for for democracy in Turkey. So, you know, it seems like that debate happens almost with every election, and there are so many elections and referendums that it becomes almost a tired debate. But it really did seem there were some people pointing to these local elections and saying, you know, this really is the last chance, the last foothold really that the opposition has in the system is in these local administrations. And if it lost those, if, you know, the ruling alliance, if Erdogan's party won back the majority of those local administrations, that really would almost be game over for Turkish democracy, you know, because that would just add that further layer of elected representatives in addition to the fact that all institutions are basically now in Erdogan's hands. So obviously, you know, that argument was that if the opposition lost most of those, it really would have been a very, very different scenario that we'd be talking about after the election. Do you think that was the right way to look at the local election, or do you think it wouldn't have been game over in that way?
Well, in social science, whether if questions are kind of speculative, but still, I would agree to a certain level with that evaluation. But democracies, of course, depend on elections. And without any elections, you cannot talk about any democracy at all. But democratic systems do not consist only of elections. So I would agree to a certain level with the argument that that was an important turning point for Turkish democracy. I would still agree that if the incumbent AKP had won places more than the opposition, then the institutionalization of this competitive authoritarian system will be much more deep-rooted. But at the same time, I wouldn't agree that that's the last chance, because every single democratic tradition has their own roots and mechanisms. So Turkey has a very strong democratic tradition, because it's a second wave democracy, first thing first. And at the region in the Middle East, it's the only, perhaps with Iran, the only society which has a very strong state tradition. So thinking about those, Turkey should be kind of evaluated in a different manner when we compare it with the other competitive authoritarian system. I don't want to do this as a reverse orientalism argument, but still, Turkey is a special case. Elections are quite important, and we see the opposition won in most of the cities and districts, and the transformation of power happened, as I said, very peacefully. So these are very positive things for Turkish democracy. Even if that was not the case, I believe there will be some other routes, other avenues for shifting Turkey's fate in democratic backsliding to a more democratic system, because still 50% of the voters in Turkey are kind of in the opposition side. Even if they're fractured, even if they're not in a whole unity, still there's a base in the Turkish society which actually holds the opposition, which is half of the society. So that's an important thing. So the chances will never end in the Turkish society, I think, with this traditions of strong state and being a second wave democracy.
Something that always strikes me that seems to be really crucially important is the party system in Turkey. It's got very, very deep roots. And that seems to be something that in times of strife does kind of rebound. Obviously, people have got huge headaches about the rigidness of these parties, which in themselves seem kind of internally undemocratic and, you know, have very problematic aspects in some ways. But at the same time, the fact that they exist, the fact that those roots go back many, many decades, despite, you know, coups and various other periods of repression, there is this almost a muscle memory in the Turkish system where parties have always played a very important role. Organization, laws around parties and how they are structured is very institutionalized at this stage. And that has been it's created almost a bottom beyond which democracy can't really collapse more, because they are always going to be these institutions that have their own interests in a way which somehow resists total centralization or becoming completely compromised by the state. I don't know. That's something that always strikes me when, you know, people compare Turkey to Russia, for example. It seems to me as an outsider, like in Russia, political parties are so easily compromised by the state. And that's possibly, I guess, because, you know, Russia going back decades doesn't have this strong rooted history of, you know, many parties jostling with their own internal dynamics, which makes them easier to buy off, easier to play against each other. Whereas Turkey is a bit more robust in that sense. These parties have their own interests. They can make their own deals. And there's just a stronger institutional memory, which has, I think, been proven in the last few years to be almost a resistance mechanism, which, you know, has allowed at least a minimum set of democratic standards, which Turkey hasn't fallen below. What do you think about that?
I would agree with this. That's a very fair point to make. But party system in Turkey, as you said, it doesn't display a continuum because of the military interventions. So there are lots of interruptions about this party system. And also, when you check the electoral history in Turkey, we have used many different methods, many different calculations, many different electoral systems, and so on and so forth. So we have this memory. We have this practice. We have this. Yes, it is very easy to lose at the same time. But as you have said, the mechanisms, institutions, both formal and informal institutions of democracy are well rooted in the Turkish society. Political parties, as you have mentioned, are one of them. Even though they are interrupted, they're interrupted lots of times. Party closures, we know that, you know, every single time we hear about those party closures and so on and so forth. But still, there is a societal root, political root for these political organizations as parties, so that they will revive and, you know, compete in any elections, again, representing their section of the society. But it's not the only political parties. As you said, you know, we have lots of different institutions. Think about, for example, the electoral management body in Turkey. Although everyone just nowadays do not trust the YSK, it's a very old organization, dating back 1950s. So it has a memory. It has a state tradition. It has duties, even though they are manipulated, they're open to manipulation by the politicians, the governments, and so on and so forth. But still, we have this organization. So we have Turkey, in short. Turkey has a very good tradition of democratic mechanisms, both informal and formal.
I guess some listeners will be hearing us and thinking that actually this conversation is quite complacent because, as you mentioned there, we've seen in recent years parties close down, particularly obviously Kurdish parties, and we've seen mayors elected from the HDP, now Dem Party, Kurdish party removed, elected mayors removed from office, replaced by basically Ankara-appointed trustees. That may well happen again. We've seen this election recently, but who knows what the coming months and years will bring. Obviously, on election day, there were various allegations from the Dem Party saying that in certain provinces, security forces have been transferred in order to shift the balance on the ground in tight races. There are these other concerns about additional pressure going forward. There are obviously politicians in jail, as we know. Selahattin Demirtas is in that position. So, like I say, this conversation could, to some people, sound quite complacent. I mean, what would you say to that? How does that fit into this broader, slightly sunny picture that we may be painting of Turkish democracy on a national scale?
Well, this is my intention was not painting a sunny picture, basically. But turning back to the Kurdish question is a very deep-rooted question of Turkish society for nearly centuries. And at this point, it is a very deep problem. It's one of the biggest problems in Turkish political history, and now it's the biggest one at the moment, at this particular time. And I believe the next advancement of Turkish democracy will be about solving the problem of Kurdish question. Of course, if someone calls themselves democratic, will not accept the situation of Selahattin Demirtas and closure of political parties, repression on the Kurdish minority in the southeastern and eastern part of Turkey. There are lots of problems with the electoral integrity as well, moving of ballot boxes, merging of ballot boxes due to security problems, so on and so forth. Of course, this is not a sunny picture at all. But in the long run, I think the next big thing in Turkish democracy or Turkish political scene will be the Kurdish question again, because without solving the Kurdish question, the things that we are talking about will be kind of, you know, temporary. Otherwise, it's a very deep-rooted and it's a very complicated question, which is kind of a very big shadow on Turkish democratic system. And also, there are lots of more than 800 journalists are in jail or prosecuted after 2010 in Turkey. So these numbers are kind of, you know, very frightening for the Turkish democracy, of course. But still, there are some avenues that we can focus and we can advance the functioning of democracy in Turkey. And it's always good to be on the optimist side rather than the pessimist side, I guess.
I was thinking as I was reading the book, you mentioned a few comparative examples, and I think that's important to keep in mind. Like, how would you compare Turkey with elsewhere? Like, where is appropriate in terms of democratic conditions? Because you talk about how in the Perceptions of Electoral Integrity Index published in 2019, Turkey ranked 21st, the lowest score among Northern and Western European countries. Also, you talk about how the evidence from the World Values Surveys most recent edition also ratifies this argument. In that, you say that in that way, Turkey is a country with characteristics similar to South American countries, among which electoral integrity is also questioned. Some of those comparisons might be interesting, you know, comparing Turkey to South America. It seems it's not often a comparison that's made. People often, as we've done already in this conversation, you know, compared it to Russia, for example, and these closer to home examples. But it seems like, yeah, the examples of state capture and the use of resources in a pretty partisan and unfair manner to almost gerrymander the system, that seems to be something that's not unique to Turkey. And indeed, you know, maybe some of those South American examples might be more appropriate, I suppose. So could you just talk a bit about that? You know, where would you consider Turkey to be a comparable example of? And by comparing Turkey to these other countries, what can we learn from making that comparison?
Yeah, actually, there's a very rich literature on the comparison of South American countries with Turkey, both in the developmental literature, in economics, and even if in the literature of military interventions, coups. So this is due to the historical background of these countries, which are very similar. Their industrialization lines, their revolutions, their modernization processes, and so on and so forth. That's why they are kind of, you know, comparable to each other. But when we think about electoral integrity, I believe these basic conditions shape the fate of those countries as being similar. These indexes are pure numbers, as you can see. They analyze if the press is free or the playing field is not tilted and so on and so forth. But comparatively, of course, this is a very different geographical region, the South American example. When we compare the Turkish case with the other countries, I believe there is one thing very peculiar, because when we see problems related to electoral integrity, they all return back to those countries as items of democratic backsliding. In Turkey in 2014, this was a hot debate because the elections are quite important in Turkey, and now the elections are kind of not free and fair, and this discussion started. And then when you check the data again, you see that the problems related to electoral integrity did help Turkish society to think in more in democratic terms. They ended up affecting the voters' behavior about keeping those elections free and fair. When you check the 2019 Istanbul re-elections, for example, according to the research that I have done between these two elections, I have found that the AKP incumbent voters were not very happy with the decision of the YSK, because they think that it just questioned the validity and the prestige of the election, which is a kind of a very special thing for the Turkish case, because elections are quite sacred. And if you want to play on them, it is a big no-no. We see this on this 2019 elections. And as you can see in the book as a chapter, it is kind of, you know, can be proven empirically. Another thing is this, when this was a hot topic in Turkish political agenda, electoral integrity issues after the 2014 local elections, we see some new development of new civil society actions and organizations, OYVTC and other organizations, which try to set some civil initiative for keeping elections safe and sound, which is kind of, you know, Turkey does not have a very strong civil society tradition. But this problem, this peculiar problem, electoral integrity problem, led the way of organizing citizens in a way that to keep their democratic rights and values. So these were two different examples when we compare to the other countries. And then these electoral integrity problems also are not unique to competitive authoritarian systems. We see these problems even if in the very old consolidated democracies. Think about USA, for example. Think about the last elections that Trump won and lost. And think about the elections in UK. There are lots of problems about those. This is a kind of a very new thing for the whole global system of democratic functioning. So in that sense, Turkey is not a kind of an exception, but the problems that we have related to electoral integrity ended up fueling some kind of initiatives to keep up with the democratic system.
You've mentioned the YSK, the YSK, the Supreme Election Board. One of the chapters in the book is on this Supreme Election Board. It's basically the electoral management body charged with administering elections in Turkey, establishing electoral integrity. It's obviously made a number of controversial decisions in recent years, recent elections. Not an uncontroversial institution. What did your research find about the YSK and the public's perception of it as an impartial institution or not?
Well, as I said earlier, the YSK is one of the earliest examples of an EMBs within the whole global system. But at the same time, the situation of YSK is kind of a very unsettled, I would say. As an institution, we cannot decide, and sometimes it acts as a court because it has the right to act as a court, and sometimes it's kind of a basic state institution which has duties and responsibilities, but it is a kind of a very big organization. One of the things that I have found, of course, there were no research before that about how people think about the YSK, the electoral management body of Turkey. Do they trust the organization or not? Before this research, there were no data on this, but we know that our data confirm. We did a recent one as well in 2023. We have very low levels of trust to YSK, which is kind of, it's not a very big surprise. But at the same time, I believe this caused more recently due to their controversial decisions, starting with the referendum decision, or beforehand, of course, printing ballots more than necessary as needed, or counting the votes as valid without the official stamp of YSK, so on and so forth. We all know these popular issues. So these controversial decisions basically reduced the trust in YSK as a strong state institution. But at the same time, they still have this reflex to govern the elections. They have the right to govern the elections from day zero to the up to the end of the registration process, and their decisions are final. And it's a very highly bureaucratic system, or red tape, I would say, rather than bureaucratic, because the YSK does not have its own resources about elections. In most cases, the YSK act as a kind of a organization which needs data and approval from other institutions of the Turkish state. For example, they do the electoral rolls by the information they receive from the Ministry of Interior. And then they work with lots of different organizations, and sometimes it causes very big problems. These are the basic things about when I think about YSK. It's the electoral management body of Turkey is a very old institution with established roots and traditions. But more recently, since the manipulation attempts of the government, the trust in the institution decreased significantly, but still, I believe they are one of the most important organizations in the Turkish state.
Now, to conclude, we are just leaving, as we say, the local elections behind. And there's been obviously a lot of talk from officials in punditry about how there are no elections scheduled now for the next 4 years, which will be pretty remarkable because Turkey, you know, has elections, it seems, pretty much every year, public votes. It's been almost nonstop for the last number of years. And that has actually been part of the process of consolidating this system around Erdogan. Now, we're looking at this period for potentially 4 years without any local or national elections. And I just wonder what your reflections on that are. You know, Erdogan is going to be still obviously firmly in power. He's going to be appointing more constitutional court judges. He'll obviously have this ability to centralize the system further around himself, the ability to dish out even more contracts to favored companies. So what do you think the effect of that is going to be 4 years down the line? How do you see the course of Turkey's democratic system? How do you see that developing over the next 4 years? Do you think by 2028, when the next general election is scheduled, it's going to be in a worse position? Or do you predict some kind of more optimistic relative recovery in terms of democratic standards?
I would go for the second option without any kind of, you know, empirical data. That's kind of a thought. In the next 4 years, as you said, we will not be having any elections at all. And this is a very, very important opportunity for the opposition to reorganize itself. As we all know, the CHP, the Basic Opposition Party, changed their leadership more recently. But it seems that in these forthcoming years, the leadership of the CHP will be again in question. Because as we all know, Ekrem İmamoğlu and Mansur Yavaş are becoming more powerful in their own constituency. And they are very strong candidates for the leadership of the CHP. And these two politicians are the totally different characters. So it depends on if they will be running for the office for CHP, and if they win, what will they do? So these are the basic questions that we will experience in these four year time. And of course, I also think that we will see a demise in the nationalistic front of the opposition, including the E party. As we see, they were not very successful in local elections. Again, a leadership race was introduced more recently. We'll see that there will be a kind of, a demise in the hold power of these parties. In the next 4 years, if the opposition, basically the CHP, of course, when I think about the opposition as the basic actor of the opposition, if they take this chance more seriously or in a more organized way, I think we will have more chances, more routes, more avenues for thinking about more positive things about democracy in Turkey. Why I'm saying this, why am I optimistic about this? Because the whole argument of the opposition basically is against the democratic backsliding in Turkey. If they can make their argument, if they can reformulate their arguments, their pledges around this new formulation of democracy in Turkish society, I believe they will have the chance of, you know, changing the 20 years, 25 years of Erdogan rule in Turkey. Having said that, of course, there are still some dangers, because we always see that the leadership races in CHP caused serious damages to the party in most of the cases. But we will see. I mean, these are all speculations. These are things that one can think about when we think about the future. But that would be a kind of a very interesting era for democratic functioning in Turkey.
That was Emre Toros. Many thanks to him for joining for episode 218. Remember, we do need your support to keep Turkey Book Talk going, and you can give that support by joining as a Turkey Book Talk member on Patreon. Membership gets you a 35% discount on all Turkey Ottoman history books published by IB Tourism Bloomsbury, transcripts of every interview, transcripts of the entire archive of interviews, and links via email to articles and other content related to the subject of each episode. For all that, just go to Turkey Book Talk's Patreon account and pledge $3, €3 or £2.50 per episode. Do also rate the podcast or write a positive review wherever you listen. Spread the word, give us a shout out on your own social media accounts. Follow via our website, turkeybooktalk.com. Follow on Twitter or X, Facebook or Instagram, or all of them. Recommend Turkey Book Talk to a friend or a foe. And I always enjoy hearing from listeners, so do send any feedback or abuse to williamjohnarmstrong@gmail.com. Finally, let me once again remind you to check out a friend of Turkey Book Talk, Turkey Recap. Turkey Recap is a weekly email newsletter that brings together all major developments in Turkey over the past 7 days, links to interesting articles, and some excellent puns. They've got a Slack channel for signed up members who want more, and they also publish high quality original on the ground reporting. Just go to turkeyrecap.com and follow the links there to subscribe. But until our next episode of Turkey Book Talk in a couple of weeks, thank you very much for listening.